Coming today on Negotiate Your Best Life with Rebecca Zung.
What I'm wondering is, from a psychological perspective, how can they shift their mind to being in that empowered place? How would you tell them to do that?
So the big questions are these. How can we navigate and negotiate every situation in our lives, in our career, in our businesses, in our relationships, and even with ourselves for our own self-worth? In other words, what if you could win every time and have no losers? Let's face it, we're not negotiating just to buy a car or for a pay raise. We are negotiating for living in every aspect of our lives. How can we do that powerfully, successfully, and victoriously? Those are the questions, and this podcast will give you the answers. My name is Rebecca Zung, and welcome to the time where you negotiate your best life.
Hello, and welcome to Negotiate Your Best Life with Rebecca Zung. I'm super excited today to have Emma Johnson here with me. Emma Johnson is the founder of the website Wealthy Single Mommy, and she does all kinds of other incredible things. I'm going to let her tell you about herself and all of the things that she's up to, and she's got some great ideas for how to be much more empowered in your divorce and in your life in general. So welcome, Emma.
Thanks so much for having me, Rebecca.
Thank you. And so tell us a little bit about you, your background, and how you came to be doing what you're doing.
So, I went through divorce myself. I was raised by divorced parents, my mom, really primarily by my mom, a single mom. And like most products of divorce, I set out to do it the quote unquote right way and be married, you know, first you get married and then you buy the real estate and then you have the babies and then you get divorced. So I did that despite my better intentions. And I found myself really thriving as a single mom, but also getting a new perspective on my own single parent childhood. And this all kind of came out a couple of years after my own divorce. I started a blog. I'm a professional writer, journalist. So my whole career I've been writing, but I really started writing very personally about my experiences of single parenting and dating as a mom and just my ideas around gender equality, especially when it came to single parents. I found there wasn't a lot of voices out there for me. So I'm, you know, a professional woman that was out there making money and taking care of my kids and having a lot of professional success, but also dating and figuring that out. And there just wasn't a narrative around that. That was just something that was not that familiar, but yet I've had girlfriends that were in similar situations. So that was the birth of Wealthy Single Mommy. It was just this place basically for me to talk about the things I was interested in. And it just took off immediately. There was an audience for it. Just even just the notion that single moms weren't poor got me in so many A-list media. It was just, it's kind of embarrassing that that was so revolutionary. So that was 2012. So that was a long time ago now, 8-9 years. And it just has grown into a big business. And now I have a book, Kick-Ass Single Mom with Penguin. I had a podcast for a while. I've been in media all the time. And now I'm really putting a lot of my energy into growing the business, of course, but also I have a real passion for equally shared parenting. So when parents separate, under whatever circumstances, the presumption should be equality, equal time for both parents. That is just common sense. There's 60 peer-reviewed studies that show that is absolutely what is best. And it's really a gender equality issue, because if we keep shoehorning men into the role of breadwinner, aka paying child support and alimony to their exes, and women being the primary caregiver, we're never going to get away from gender stereotypes that hold us both all back. And now we have the science, thankfully, that shows us really what's best for children. So this is something I feel is a very important feminist issue. And I've just been putting a lot of time and energy into promoting that.
Okay, cool. So how long have you been divorced?
Oh, 12 years, something like that. 11, 10, 12 years, long time.
Okay. And how old were your kids when you got divorced?
Two and being born, let's say.
Oh, they were little teeny ones, teeny weenies.
Yes, as young as they could possibly be.
Yeah. And were you working at the time?
I was. At that time, I was making, I'd been a freelance writer before my babies were born and then going through a divorce. But I really had scaled things down to part-time work and was very dependent on my ex-husband. My husband at the time had a, you know, high-paying corporate job with the good benefits. And I just slipped into that role. You know, it was like that was, I drank the Kool-Aid that was the good mom is the at-home mom. The good mom is the martyr mom. And it was such a short time that I was a mom before I was a married mom, right? That I didn't really have a lot of time to figure that out. And then I got divorced and it was just like a no-brainer. And there's an interesting caveat in my divorce story in that before we broke up, my ex-husband suffered a traumatic brain injury. So that was an extremely unusual and traumatic experience for all of us. And I could tell that, you know, his high-paying job probably wouldn't last. Like the writing was very much on the wall, though he's recovered and working and remarried and living a full life again, thankfully. But at that time, there were years I was just like, this is going to be on me. I did get child support for a little while. And I just, it's just for no one's fault. It wasn't his fault. It was no one's fault that wasn't going to last. And I think that was there's a lot of gift in that because it wasn't his fault. Because I had the ability. I mean, I'm an educated white woman that had like a six-figure business before I had kids. Like, why shouldn't I earn my own money? That's ridiculous. Why did I think, you know, why is there this notion that I would be dependent on a man for the rest of my life? It's just shameful. And it took me a long time to develop that, like flip that assumption that I had and work it out. And it was just, I think, again, because of this gift that, you know, I didn't have a choice. Like most women don't. The average amount of child support that's ordered by the courts is $400 a month. And only 40% of that is actually paid. Single mothers in this country are financially independent of the men. And yet the message we have for them is that you should go and fight and take him for all he's worth. And we can do better than that.
Yeah, well, I know in my situation, I got married at 19 the first time, and I had three kids by the time I was 23. So, and I, even though I was raised in a kind of, I would say, upper middle class, you know, my dad was an anesthesiologist, my mom owned a real estate company, and, you know, I actually went to boarding school for high school and whatever, but I kind of derailed and, you know, got married at 19, had three kids by the time I was 23, and went back to law school after I got divorced. And I was my late 20s and I had already lived like this whole life. Mm. And we had already been married for like 8 or 10 years or something at that point. And here I was divorced with these three little children. And I put myself back through school. I had finished college when my kids were 3, 4, and 5, but then, you know, I got divorced and decided to go back to law school, you know, for much the same thing that you're talking about. It was like, well, I got to pull myself up by my bootstraps and I got to figure out how I'm going to take care of these kids. And, you know, my ex-husband was not a professional. I mean, he's a good guy. He's a hardworking guy, but he wasn't making millions of dollars or anything like that. And so, you know, I thought if I want to send my kids to private school, I want to send my kids to college, I want to be able to take them on vacation or provide extracurricular activities for them, I'm just going to have to do it. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm going to have to do it. And so I get a lot of what you're saying, but what I'm wondering is from a psychological perspective, you know, like, you know, help us walk us through where you were and how you made that shift. What caused you, you know, I guess maybe your ex-husband's, you know, issues, but, you know, for those people who are listening, who are like, you know, they don't have something that happens with their ex-husband or something, you know, how can they shift their mind to get out from this victim mentality or somebody needs to take care of me mentality to being in that empowered place? How would you tell them to do that?
Well, I'll just tell you, making your own money feels so damn good. It is 100% freedom. You live off of somebody else's money. Well, first of all, who's to say he's going to have that money? He can lose his job. Everyone's losing their jobs now. Pay get, you know, so what are you going to do? He's going to lose his job. You're going to take him back to court. His pay might get cut, take him back to court. And then you're fighting. It's always about getting. And you're dependent on this man that you're not involved with anymore. Right. And you can make all the arguments that you take care of the kids, whatever. you can never make, no matter how much he's giving you, you can always make more on yourself. And there's no such thing as a free child support check. There's always strings attached to it. It heightens conflict as co-parenting. If you want to say it's about the kids, what's best for the kids is watching their mothers work and earn and be these vibrant, independent, autonomous, beautiful adults. You are a beautiful, brilliant woman. Go out into the world and be her. Right? So if that money always stays between two people, I'm telling you, Rebecca, you're a successful woman. I'm a successful woman. There is no such thing as whoever makes the money believes that money is theirs. There is no such thing as family money. If the mantra that you are telling listener, I'm talking to the listener, if the mantra is that, oh, well, we were together and that was family. He made it, but I stayed home. We shared it. He doesn't believe that. He might have said that because that's the thing that we're supposed to say, but he doesn't actually believe that. So now he's writing you how many thousands of dollars checks, $100 of checks every month. He comes to pick up the kids. He wonders, why is there a new couch in the living room? Why your nails always look so good, right? Oh, you're going on vacation to see your mom. Who's paying for the airfare? And it creates that tension, whether it's overt or subtle, it is there. And you know it because he earned that money and he's giving it to you, right? So I want every woman to feel the freedom to earn her own money and pay her bills. And that might mean you move out of a big house into an apartment. That's okay. That's totally okay. Lots of people live in apartments. I mean, I live in New York City. My kids share a bedroom. They're boy and girl. That's okay. They are not going to die. It is okay. It is a step that you're taking for self-respect and for a future of just infinite possibilities.
Yeah. I think for some people though, and by the way, I just want to make sure that I say on the show that, you know, the majority of the time, yes, it's the man who's making the money and the woman mm-hmm. who's like looking for the child support or the alimony or whatever. But I've seen many cases where it is the other way around too. I've had many, many cases where the dynamic of the situation for various reasons has turned out that the wife is the one who's been the breadwinner and the husband's been the one who's stayed at home, and he ends up wanting the alimony or the child support or both. And, you know, I'm sure that you would say that this conversation is for all people to feel empowered and independent, whoever you are.
Oh, 100%. And I will say it, hell hath no fury like a woman paying alimony. Like that pissed off women paying alimony are what is going to change alimony laws in all the states. It is so, and you know who's really going to change the alimony laws and who is actually is the new partners of men paying alimony. So here's a little anecdotal piece of advice for women that are fighting for all that money. So I live in New York City. One of the things I loved about going through a divorce, I was single for the first time in New York. So many interesting, successful men. I had so much fun dating, and a lot of those interesting, successful men making money are paying alimony to women. To those women. And they are so pissed off that they're not going to date another woman that's living off of alimony. You limit your dating pool from those guys. They want a woman that gets it, that's doing stuff in the world, that's got interesting things to talk about because she's out in the world earning and in business and contributing. That's what's exciting to those interesting, successful men.
Yeah. And I know for myself, it's like, I just don't want to have somebody who's breathing down my neck because I feel like I want to buy an expensive pair of shoes, or I want to treat myself to something for my birthday, like a nice handbag or whatever. Like that's my money. Like I earned it. And, you know, and yeah, we have shared money, and I wouldn't want my husband to go out and spend, you know, $20,000 on something and not have a discussion about that, of course. But, you know, for the most part on the day-to-day things, like I don't have to answer to anybody. And so I can understand where you're coming from with that. What I want to make sure that we speak to though is for the people who just feel like they're stuck. Like, okay, well, how do I turn this around? You know, I'd love to be a wealthy single mommy or a wealthy single daddy. How do I turn this around? How do I start thinking about how I break out of that mold?
Yeah. And I think that's a really great question, right? Because often these things are cultural, and I really have come to appreciate the power of the people that we surround ourselves with. So if you're living in a community, I mean, especially if you're going through a divorce and you're so vulnerable, it's a real loss. Even if you initiated it, even if you agree it's the best thing for everybody, it's still just every vertical of your life is upside down. And there's not a lot of really great positive role models out there. So even maybe you shore up your loved ones, your close family and friends. And the most common message you're most likely to get is, you know, take it for all he's worth, get all his money, you keep the house, you keep the kids. So here you are, like all these people that love you and really want the best for you are probably giving you really rotten advice. So how do you, and you may be living in a community where there's other women like you that, you know, don't have a lot of professional options. So I would say the first thing is really to set that intention, right? So maybe you are living off of that alimony now. Okay. All right. That's cool. But it's right now it's communicating to yourself. And I would urge you to communicate to your ex. All right, this is short term. And that's the reality in the courts. You can speak to this better than I can. Increasingly, lifetime alimony is a thing of the past. It's really going to be temporary to help women get on their, the recipient, get on their feet and onto something better. But it's like, all right, let's just do this for 18 months and I'm on my way. I'm enrolled. I'm going back to school to get certified and whatever. Or I am getting training, or here's what I'm doing, working with a recruiter. Set the ball in motion, give yourself a deadline and communicate that to your ex, right? And it could be a beautiful partnership, right? Like if you guys are working as a team to become financially independent of each other, you get the co-parenting thing off to a better start. You know, like if he knows you're broke, he might be feeling guilty about that to cut you off completely, you know, could be appealing to a masculine ego. I mean, there's any number of ways you can work this to your advantage in a healthy way. So get that thing going. Get the right network of people around you. Surround yourself with other women that are doing what you want to do, whether that's, you know, in the new field that you're pursuing, women that have divorced with some dignity, right? Women that have gone on the other side and built lives that they're really proud of. Just start by osmosis. You just start to pick up their attitudes and then practical things too. They have networks and they can introduce you to people and make suggestions for your career and look over your resume for you. And just start, because you're launching a new life. You can't build a new life with old mentalities and old networks.
Coming up, more with Emma Johnson on negotiating your personal declaration of independence.
You know, everybody has their own notion of what's fair or justice, what justice should be, you know.
Well, why are we going for justice in divorce, right?
Well, that doesn't exist. There is no such thing as divorce justice.
Justice suggests there's retaliation, right?
Not everyone needs full representation by an attorney on retainer. In fact, sometimes lawyering up can make things worse. At Hello Divorce, you get the best of all worlds. You get technology and legal professionals. You get some help along the way, and you get to do the parts yourself that you want to do yourself. Just $99 a month, cancel at any time. You can use their divorce navigator, think TurboTax for divorce, to prepare all of your legal forms. Right now, it's available in California, but it will be expanding soon to other states. Sign up free and get a 15-minute free intro call and access to loads of curated resources, tools, and worksheets designed to make the divorce process affordable, transparent, empowering, and successful. Use the code HELLO50 to get $50 off toward anything you'd like. Just go to hellodivorce.com to get started today. Are you struggling with how to negotiate and win? Maybe you're dealing with a personality that's particularly challenging, like a narcissist or other high conflict personality, and you're feeling powerless. Make sure to download my free Win My Negotiation cheat sheet at www.winmynegotiation.com.
Take a listen to our archive, where you can hear more on how to negotiate your best life, including Negotiating with Your Inner Perfectionist with Bronwyn Saglabini.
Doing the best we can every day, and some days you win and some days you don't, but there seems to be this persistent noise in my head, which seems baked into my personality, which is like, no matter how hard I slay every day, and I slay, most days I slay, it's never enough.
And now we return to today's show.
I just can hear the collective of people who are listening thinking, well, that's fine for somebody who's in their 30s, or that's fine for somebody who's still young, or that's fine for somebody who has a nice ex-husband who might feel guilty. I mean, I'm just telling you, I know like how a lot of people think. And I can just say like, hey, I started a whole new career, you know, just recently. And, you know, I had been practicing law for over 20 years at that point. And yeah, I could have sat there and continued to practice law, but, you know, I just decided to make a shift and create a whole new thing where I have this negotiation program for dealing with high conflict personalities and slayer negotiation with a narcissist and things like that. So, you know, regardless of however old you are or wherever you are in your life, that's your jumping off point, wherever mm-hmm. you are. You know, I mean, I know it's almost cliche at this point, but, you know, Colonel Sanders started KFC when he was like in his 60s or something. I mean, he was pretty, you know, I think he was already retired from whatever it was that he was doing before. And so, you know, I have a really good friend who, when people are constantly giving excuses about why they can't do something, she'll say, okay, so do you want to be right about that? Or do you want it to be different?
Right. It's like, people are like, I'll be talking to women about their projects and they're like, oh, well, I'm really excited about this thing. It's really cool, but I don't want to make a lot of money from it. I'm like, well, that's a great goal, because 100% you can accomplish that goal, not to make money from it.
Well, I actually just was having this conversation with Dr. Romney about narcissists, and she was saying, like, you know, have people say, like, I just want the kids, like, I'm not in it for the money or whatever, when in their divorce. And I'm like, okay, and what's wrong with asking for money? I mean, you know, like, if you're entitled to half the assets, why not ask for half the assets? If the law provides for that, then I don't see a problem asking for that. And I think a part of what's going on in our culture as well is this notion that we're not supposed to be in anything for the money. That somehow that makes you evil or bad or greedy or...
Well, for women, that's very specific to women, though, right? Men are very comfortable making money. Money makes the world go round. Men have enjoyed the autonomy and power of money forever. They're cool with it.
Yeah, you may be right with that. But I'm here to push back and say, what's wrong with being in it for the money? It doesn't make you bad, evil, or unkind, or ungenerous, or if that's even a word. But, you know, like, there's nothing wrong with saying that you want to earn money, and you can also still be a really good person and do good in the world and help people.
Money is neutral. Money is neither good nor bad. Money is a function of life. You can have lots of it and do horrible things and destroy humanity and the environment, and it can be a wonderful thing that can be used to serve. But I heard you say a couple different, I mean, there's a lot of things going on. Just because the law provides for, law provides for alimony and child support, and I'm here to point out all the downfalls of that. Just because you can get it doesn't mean you should. Just because I can go and arbitrarily sue a large corporation, and there's all kinds of very legal ways to be an asshole, that doesn't mean you should do it.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. But, you know, if you contributed to half the assets, then I think you should be getting half of them,
but there's always...
And there's another whole thing with that. It's like, if your life was set up in a certain way, you know, like, you did go ahead and forego a career, whether you're a man or a woman, but you decided to forego a career to stay home and take care of the children because that was the dynamic that was set up with your family. And so, therefore, you don't have retirement assets, or you don't have a pension. I mean, that's why the law provides for you to get half of those things, because that's the way the marriage was set up. You know, should it be an ongoing thing? No. I mean, I've had people who've said to me, I want to continue to get half of, you know, his pay or his pension or his whatever after the marriage is over. No, of course you're not going to do that. But
of course not. You and I can agree on that, but there are laws, like lots of state pensions allow for the spouse to get half of the pension for in perpetuity. It's crazy.
And well, it's going to be tied to the time that they were married. It would only be to the time tied to the amount of that was accumulated during the time that they were married. But, you know, I mean, these are good conversations to have because, you know, what's fair, what's not fair. I mean, fair, I've heard it, the expression fair is for the Ferris wheel. Like, you know, it doesn't even exist, right? I mean, because everybody has their own notions of fair. I mean, it's kind of like the other F word when it comes to negotiating because everybody has their own notion of what's fair. I mean, so many people come through the doors of a divorce lawyer's office. And, you know, I can't tell you how many people, pretty much every single person who's come through the doors of my office says, I don't want to fight. I just want this to be amicable. I don't want to spend a lot of money. Every single person says that nobody wants to spend lots of money with a divorce lawyer. But you know, everybody has their own notion of what's fair or justice, what justice should be, you know.
But why are we going for justice in divorce, right?
Well, that doesn't exist. There is no such thing as divorce justice.
Justice suggests there's retaliation, right? Like if you commit a crime, you have to pay the price. Somebody is wrong and they're penalized. That is the essence of justice. But that does not apply in divorce. There's no reparations in divorce. You got your hurt feelings hurt because he cheated. You got your feelings hurt because she said mean things. No one cares. Who cares? Go to talk to your therapist about it. Complain to your friends about it. Just divide the assets. Go make your own money. Split the kids. And there's no punishing.
If everybody had that mentality, you know, divorce lawyers would be making a hell of a lot less money. That's for sure.
That's right. We can talk about that. I mean, like going back to my passion for equally shared parenting, there's been dozens and dozens of pieces of legislature that have gone through states over the decades. And number one opponent is always bar associations.
Well, you know, I mean, there is a standard of best interests of the child that does need to be looked at. And I personally am offended when a judge says, hey, we're just going to be doing 50-50 here before they've even heard one shred of evidence. Because there are times when maybe one person travels 75% of the time. And so that means part of the time that the kids are going to be, you know, with that other parent, they're really with the babysitter. And that's not necessarily in the best interests of the child. So as a lawyer, I think, yeah, most of the time a 50-50 plan works. And most of the time that's what gets entered. But there are times when, you know, or maybe the person is, you know, an addict of some sort.
And these are extreme circumstances. I'm arguing for a presumption of 50-50. And then you make the deviations from there. Right now, we have a presumption of battling to the bitter end.
There really is no presumption for any sort of parenting plan in most states. I mean, I think there are some states that do have a presumption.
Kentucky has equally shared parenting for 2 years now.
Yeah, but most states don't have that yet. Florida almost got it done, but then it was piggybacked onto an alimony statute that was also eradicating permanent alimony, but it had the retroactive feature because, of course, there were a whole bunch of guys who were in the legislature paying permanent alimony that needed it to be retroactive so that they could actually have it work for themselves. Because of that, the judge vetoed the entire bill, and so it didn't end up going through.
Yeah. But it's politics. Isn't it so interesting, these big, amazing bills that could be changing so many families' lives for the better come down to the individuals that are in the state capitals in their own personal situations. It's just politics as usual.
Well, because what happens is if they made it retroactive, then the floodgates of modifications would have gone crazy. And like every, you know, the divorce lawyers' doors would have been people would have been storming the gates as well as, and the judicial system is already overworked and has way too many cases. And so, you know, I think that he was just thinking in terms of, this is just not going to be a practical end to this solution. You know, I mean,
well, that's where we need leadership and we have to be having a long-term vision for activism. There's change is always going to be messy and painful in the short term. It absolutely is. And yep, the family courts would have been overrun in the short term. Absolutely. But long term, the benefits would be so monumental. And it's really a shame that they couldn't have that foresight.
Yeah, I think it's just, it's always that the judicial system is always catching up to what's happening in the real world. And that's part of the problem. You know, I mean, just the whole alimony thing in the first place is, you know, it came out of coverture, which was, you know, like a really old fashioned word from like the 1800s where, you know, the husbands were supposed to take care of the wives. And that's where the whole notion of alimony came from in the first place. And, you know, and it hasn't really been the norm that the mom stays home and the dad works in such a long time. I mean, most households have two parents who are working unless they're affluent. And so it's kind of an antiquated notion in a lot of ways anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but isn't it interesting? I'm curious what you would see in Florida, because I know in my mom communities, I start going off about shared parenting, equally shared parenting, and a lot of moms will chime in. And I know there's pockets in Florida where these moms come and they're like, oh, that's the law here. It's the law that it's equal. It's, you know, it's a presumption.
It's not. It's not.
But it's so common, to your point.
I've heard judges say, tell me why I shouldn't enter 50-50. And I'm like, tell me why that you just didn't make a presumption and there's no presumption in the law, because that's a presumption. Tell me why we shouldn't do 50-50. That's a presumption. And I've heard judges say that even though there isn't a presumption in the law. The law is still best interests of the child.
Mm-hmm. It is. But to your point that the culture, that policy, the judiciary lags the culture and policy lags the judiciary.
Right.
So, which is, you know, that's kind of where I've been focusing my work. I have a large media platform and media all the time and stuff. So it's like, I feel like this is my activism. It's just to talk these things through, because it's a lot of assumption. There's still so much assumption that moms are the better parent, that the kids should primarily be staying with one family.
Well, and I have to have hard conversations with moms about that, yeah. Because, you know, I'll have moms who will say, you know, let's say they have a 3-year-old or something, and they'll say, he's never given them a bath, he's never fed them a meal, he's never taken them to preschool or whatever. And I'm like, I'm just going to tell you right now what the judge is going to say, because that's the family dynamic. That's how it was set up. He can learn, he can take them to school, he can give them a bath, he can feed them dinner. You know, like, that's what the judge is going to say. That's the harsh reality of it. And, you know, whether you like it or not.
Right. Yes. And thankfully, and if you're not familiar, I'm happy to send you the links. There's really great research around that, that even very young children do best with a lot of approximately equal time with both parents, including overnights. And it's really, I mean, ultimately, this means that your kids have that much more love in their lives. When we marginalize men to the every other weekend dad, they statistically check out. And that not only do the kids not have an actively involved dad, they miss out on all those grandparents and all those friends. And mom, I get it. I'm speaking to the moms listening. I get it. It's so scary. My babies were tiny in nursing. One of them was nursing. I didn't double nurse, for the record. And they were like, I was just bear to be around them. But fast forward a year or two, and I was like, my ex-husband would flake on visits and I would lose my mind. I'm like, I need a break. I'm working. I'm making all the money. How dare you flake? This should be 50-50. I'm overwhelmed. So I'm giving you the gift. You can't see it now because it's so traumatic to think about being away from your kids, but 50-50 is a gift. It's giving your kids this beautiful relationship with so many people, and it's giving you yourself. That judge is giving you yourself.
Thank you so much. This is so interesting. What a lively conversation. Really, really fascinating and interesting. Can you tell us more about you, where we can find out more about you, your websites, et cetera?
Yeah, so just head over to wealthysinglemommy.com. It's Emma Johnson. I'm on all the social media platforms. And you can check out my book, The Kick-Ass Single Mom, on Amazon.
Yeah, I will drop a link to that below as well. And thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. This is really, really cool. Very fascinating.
Well, thank you for the work you're doing too.
Thank you.
Thanks for stopping by and listening to this episode of Negotiate Your Best Life. I'm Rebecca Zung. Check back next Monday for more inspirational pearls of wisdom. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, I'd love if you would give it a 5-star rating and tell me what you liked in a review on iTunes. Also, be sure to grab your winning negotiation cheat sheet at winmynegotiation.com. And remember, today is a perfect day to start negotiating your best life.